is appeal number 08-2881, United States versus Laban. The attorney for the government in this case and in the next two cases, Linda Mullen, is going to argue by speakerphone. Are you connected?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. Thank you.
How's the weather in the Quad Cities?
Well,
we excuse you from coming here because of this massive snowstorm.
Well, I appreciate that. It's still quite icy, and we're expecting another 5 to 6 inches today, so it's pretty treacherous out there.
But good. Keep it there.
I'll do my best.
Mr. McQuaid.
Your Honors, my name is Matthew McQuaid on behalf of Eve Laban. May it please the Court, in this case, Mr. Laban was charged with possession with intent to distribute cocaine and also a count of illegal entry by an alien. The defendant filed and was heard on a motion to suppress evidence before Judge Mim, which was denied. Prior to pleading guilty, he preserved that issue, contesting the trial court's finding in that matter, pled guilty, and received 120 months imprisonment. On appeal, the defendant, Mr. Laban, does challenge the trial court's ruling denying his motion to suppress evidence. Specifically, the defendant is saying that the court's finding that the second encounter with the state trooper was a consensual encounter is clearly erroneous. He is saying the defendant's position is that was a seizure. That second encounter was a seizure, not based on a reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. The first encounter, or what he's basing this argument on, is the actions of the state trooper at the time that the second encounter, that he engaged in the second encounter with Mr. Laban and then received consent. The first encounter was based on a valid traffic stop, which the investigation by the trooper, he determined that a warning ticket was going to be how he was going to deal with that situation, and that's what he did. The trooper approached Mr. Laban with the warning ticket, explained what was going to happen, had him sign it, and ultimately the trooper then handed the driver's license and rental agreement back to the defendant and told him, "We're going to get you on your way. Have a safe trip, or have a nice trip." At that point, the trooper stood up from the window, turned and walked away. It is that point that the second encounter then begins or commences. The trooper walks back up towards the window, turns and faces the window and says, "Hey, before you go, can I ask you a few more questions?" In doing so, or at the simultaneously to saying those words to Mr. Laban, the trooper leans forward. He's leaning down, and then he leans forward, placing his face and part of his head through the window, through the open window, and also takes his right hand and places it in through the window area.
Now, this whole traffic stop was recorded on a video surveillance camera.
It was.
Is that correct?
It was, sir.
And I assume you've watched that.
I have.
Does it show that head is in the trooper's head is in the car?
I say it does, and I've watched it numerous times.
What is that Judge Mim thing?
Judge Mim didn't mention it in his ruling. He did not mention it. It was argued by defense counsel. He asked the trooper the question. The trooper said, "I don't recall sticking my head in the window." Subsequently in the argument, defense counsel mentioned it again, that the trooper did physically place his head in through the window. In his ruling, the trial court didn't deal with it or never addressed it, either saying, "Yes, I found that his head was through the window," or, "And if it was, it didn't matter in my ruling," or, "No, it did not, and it clearly did not." I believe a review of the video shows that it clearly does. It clearly did happen that way.
I'm not sure this case turns on whether or not his head was inside or not. You're not arguing that that's the sole basis for your suppression motion.
I'm saying, well,
it's just one of the many factors to be considered.
I'm saying it is one of the many factors, but I think it's an unusual factor. I think it's a factor that we you don't normally see. I can't sit or stand before this court and say there's a ton of factors here. The fact was it was a 15-minute traffic stop, which clearly the defendant was, his physical movement was restrained. I think the,
you don't contest that.
That's, I don't.
Perfectly the probable cause, and everything was hunky-dory until he came back and said, "Oh, I forgot. I wanted to ask you a couple other things."
I would say that, and I'm also going to concede that At the time the officer walked away from the window, after handing him the ticket and telling him he's going to get him on his way, have a safe trip, or have a nice trip, that the defendant or a reasonable person in that situation would have felt free to leave. However, by returning to the car...
Well, that's such a fiction in these cases.
Well,
a reasonable person never would feel that they can leave when the squad car has its lights on in back of them during a traffic stop.
Well, I would argue that. I would completely argue that. I was just dealing with the fact that that's the standard is set by case law. So the courts have talked about that on occasion, but they've never held that to be a deciding factor. I think when the officer reapproached and says, hey, before you go, he's actually retracting or some way of retracting the ability or the, at least in the defendant's mind or a reasonable person's mind that they are free to leave.
The thing is, though, he posed it as a question, though, because you're not disputing that he said, hey, before you go, can I ask you a couple questions real quick?
I'm not, Your
and
Honor.
Your guy says, okay.
No, he doesn't.
So it's not like him coming to say, I've got questions, you better answer. I mean, there's no element of intimidation or anything. Your guy didn't say he was intimidated when his head went in the window.
No, Your Honor, and I'm not saying that. But I am saying that the physical intrusion into the car is a physical restraint of the defendant. It is almost synonymous with maybe tugging someone by the arm as they're walking away and getting their attention and pulling them back. It's not a standoff situation. He is intruding. There is an intrusion here by a police officer, which is creating a situation that renders that consent, which was given, involuntary. It is a coercive situation. It is a police officer. I believe the choice of words that he did use does indicate that you can't ignore the police presence here. You can't ignore me. You have to deal with my question, either by a yes or a no. By placing himself in that position, by coming forward like that, he is basically pulling the defendant back or holding him back, or a reasonable person would feel that they could not pull away. If a review of the tape would be clear, my review of the tape is any person with the officer in the position that he was in could not pull away. It would be dangerous to the officer, for starters, but based on the law, it is an intrusion. It is a physical restraint. That created a coercive atmosphere, rendering the consent that was given involuntary. If it is a seizure, it has to be based on a reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. I believe this record doesn't indicate any indication that this officer believed that this defendant, Mr. Laban, was engaged in any criminal activity whatsoever. And I believe that based on that, the seizure is then unlawful. I'm asking this court to reverse the trial court's decision to deny the motion to suppress evidence based on those factors.
Ms. Mullen?
Yes, may it please the court. Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. Again, let me express my appreciation to the panel for allowing me to argue by speakerphone this morning. If I need to adjust my volume, I trust that you'll let me know. The defendant makes a very narrow argument in his brief and here this morning, and that is he isolates these two facts, that the emergency lights were still flashing and that Trooper Fratsky, according to him, at least momentarily placed his head inside of the car to argue that this was non-consensual. But that really isn't the proper approach here. I think as some of the questioning by the panel pointed out, we're to look at the totality of the circumstances, and you really need to look at those two facts with respect to everything that was going on. And the defendant acknowledges that the officer had returned all of the paperwork to him, wished him a safe trip, began to walk away from the vehicle before ever reapproaching that vehicle. I am so glad that we have a videotape in this case, and I would strongly encourage you to watch it, because we don't really need to argue today about whether the officer placed his head all the way in the car, or partially in the car, or never into the car. He was clearly leaning on the window rim, talking to Mr. Laban when he reapproached the vehicle. I've looked at that video. It doesn't look to me as if he has his head in the car, but again, I'm not sure that is particularly relevant here. I think what's much more relevant is when you see the video, you'll see that the entire encounter from beginning to end is very low-key, friendly, conversational. Trooper Fratsky has a very folksy demeanor about him, almost like an Andy Taylor from Mayberry kind of demeanor.
Ms. Mullen?
Yes.
This is Judge Sykes. That's how they always do it. In Wisconsin, the state troopers call this a badger stop. And they're trained to conduct it in this way. Is that the case in Illinois? You wouldn't call it a badger stop in Illinois. I don't know if they have a name for it, but this is a specific technique of getting consent to search a car.
Judge Sykes, that's absolutely right, and Trooper Frotsky has been trained to do it this way. And I'm sure it's because, you know, obviously we would hope that the police officers would read the case law and know what things are considered important. Here we have one officer. It's a public place. He doesn't have his gun drawn. He doesn't ask Mr. LeBon to relocate. There's nothing about what he does that is threatening or aggressive here. The defense counsel makes it sound as though there was something aggressive about the officer's actions here in placing his head. You know, what he did was he knelt down a little bit, placed his arms on the window ledge, presumably so that Mr. LeBon could hear him. This is a busy interstate. It's in the morning. Cars are rushing by. So he needed to make sure that he could be heard. But there was nothing about this encounter at all that was anything other than friendly and conversational. And yes, I'm sure that Trooper Frotsky has been trained to conduct himself in this way so that the person he's talking to doesn't feel coerced, doesn't feel as though he's not free to leave. I do want to touch upon the flashing lights as well, because Judge Evans did mention that it's a little bit of a fiction that people feel like they're free to leave when the lights are going. I think that that's typically the case. Certainly when a police officer turns on his oscillating lights, that's the cue to the person he's following to pull over and stay there. Here I think it's significant that the officer said to Mr. LeBon, have a safe trip. Be careful if you're going to get a bottle of water out of your cooler. We'd prefer that you pull over first, but here's your warning ticket. Here's your papers. Have a safe trip. Be on your way, and started to walk away. So I think in context here, the fact that the lights were still going at that point, most people would have felt that they were, a reasonable person would feel that he or she was free to leave. I think in typical traffic stops, those lights remain on until both the person who's been pulled over and the officer are back onto the roadway.
What do you think hypothetically would have happened if when the officer goes back and says, wait a minute, a couple other questions, that Mr. LeBon would have rolled the window up and said, no thank you, and took off?
Well, that question or something similar to that was asked of Trooper Frotsky at the suppression hearing, Judge Evans, and what he said was, he was free to leave. I didn't have enough to hold him there. And so I went back to ask him some questions and to see whether or not he would give me consent to search the car. But he did not believe that he had enough to hold him there and had no intention of holding him there at that point.
I thought it was unusual that there is a dog in the trooper's car, a drug-sniffing dog. Is that the usual procedure on I-80?
I don't know whether it is or not. Trooper Frotsky is a canine officer and happened to have his dog with him. Of course, he didn't bring the dog out until after he had the consent to search the car. I suppose he could have.
He could have
run
done
the
that.
Dog
don't you think? Don't you think he could have brought the dog out to do a sniff?
He absolutely could have during the initial phase of that. He had probable cause. He had pulled him over, and we know from the case law that he certainly could have run the dog around while he had him stopped on the for the probable cause for the traffic violation, and just chose in this case not to do that. And in fact, didn't have the dog come out until after he had located the drugs in the trunk. I'm not sure why he chose to approach it that way, but there was certainly nothing unreasonable about what he did here. I'm happy to answer any more questions that the panel might have. And here
I guess
that,
not.
I will return the balance of my time. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. McQuaid, anything further?
Your Honor, I think there's a distinction to be made between whether or not this physical intrusion happened and it doesn't make a difference based on the totality of circumstances, or it didn't happen at all. And my argument is that it did happen, and by that happening, you're placing the onus on a citizen to say, no, I don't want to answer your questions, and please get off my car. And I think there's just a different factual scenario than we normally see, and I'm asking the court to consider that in considering the totality of the circumstances, and that being a very big circumstance in this case.
Okay, thank you. And this case will be taken under advisement. We'll proceed to case number